Church. Happy to be with you virtually today. Grateful for technology that makes it possible.
Possible.
My name
My
is
name is
Pete
Pete
Van
Van
Valkenburg.
Valkenburg.
I'm a friend of
Friend of
Dave and
Dave and
Diana's
Diana's
from
from
a
a
long
long
time
time
ago.
ago.
Someday,
Someday,
I'd
I'd
really
really
love to
love to
be
be
able to
able
have
to
an
have an
opportunity to
opportunity to
come
come
and
and
join
join
you
you
in
in
person.
person.
But
But
until
until
then,
then,
I'm grateful
grateful
for
for
this.
this.
Today
Today
we're
we're
going
going
to
to
go
go
over
over
a
a
bit
bit
of
of
a
a
mental
mental
health
health
piece,
piece,
mental
mental
health
health
in
in
the
the
gospel,
gospel,
mental
mental
health
health
in
in
Jesus,
Jesus,
specifically
specifically
talking
talking
about
about
trauma.
trauma.
A little
A
bit
little
about
bit about
me,
me,
just
just
so
so
you
you
guys
guys
know
know
who
who
you're
you're
looking
looking
at
at
for
for
the
the
next
next
little
little
while.
while.
I've
I've
been
been
on
on
Manitou
Manitou
Island,
Island,
Northern
Northern
Ontario,
Ontario,
for
for
those
those
of
of
you
you
familiar,
familiar,
a
a
little
little
bit
bit
west
west
of
of
Sudbury.
Sudbury.
For
For
approximately
approximately
the
the
last
last
13
13
years.
years.
We've
We've
got
got
here
here
in
in
2008.
2008.
This
This
is
is
where
where
I
I
met
met
my
my
wife.
wife.
And
And
we've
we've
been
been
here
here
together,
together,
working
working
in
in
a
a
variety
variety
of
of
capacities,
capacities,
in
in
church
church
planting
planting
and
and
youth
youth
work.
work.
I've
I've
had
had
the
the
opportunity
opportunity
in
in
that
that
time
time
to
to
also
also
work
work
alongside
alongside
of
of
the
the
mental
mental
health
health
teams
teams
on
on
the
the
island
island
in
in
Indigenous
Indigenous
communities,
communities,
and
and
happy
happy
to
to
be
be
doing
doing
that,
that,
being
being
able
able
to
to
serve
serve
wherever
wherever
I
I
can.
can.
We
We
have
have
three
three
children.
children.
They
They
are
are
7, 8, and 9
7, 8, and 9
years
years
old.
old.
I
I
had
had
to
to
make
make
sure
sure
I
I
got
got
that
that
right.
right.
So
So
we're
we're
busy
busy
up
up
here.
here.
We're
We're
in
in
again,
again,
stuck
stuck
in
in
a
a
pandemic-y
pandemic-y
kind
kind
of
of a
time,
time,
just
just
like
like
the
the
rest
rest
of
of
you.
you.
Looking
Looking
forward
forward
to
to
get
get
out
out
of
of
that.
that.
For
For
work
work
currently,
currently,
what
what
I
I
do,
do,
historically,
historically,
you
you
know,
know,
we
April
and
and
I
I
have
have
run
run
youth
youth
ministry,
ministry,
that's
that's
worked
worked
with
with
a
a
lot
lot
of
of
the
the
Indigenous
Indigenous
kids
kids
and
and
their
their
families,
families,
from
from
one
one
of
of
the
the
First
First
Nations
Nations
communities
communities
up
up
here.
here.
But
But
since
since
that
that
time,
time,
I've
I've
spent
spent
time
time
at
at
a
a
couple
couple
of
of
different
different
agencies,
agencies,
doing
doing
some
some
contracting
contracting
and
and
interim
interim
mental
mental
health
health
work,
work,
interim
interim
child
child
and
and
youth
youth
intensive
intensive
therapist.
therapist.
And
And
now
now
I'm
I'm
in
in
a
a
role
role
where
where
I
I
am
am
coordinating
coordinating
a
a
crisis
crisis
response
response
team,
team,
where
where
we
we
do
do
mental
mental
health
health
crisis
crisis
response,
response,
for
for
all
all
seven
seven
First
First
Nations
Nations
on
on
Manitou
Manitou
Island.
Island.
It's
It's
a
a
challenging
challenging
job.
job.
It's
It's
an
an
exciting
exciting
job.
job.
It's
It's
one
one
that
that
I'm
I'm
grateful
grateful
to
to
be
be
able
able
to
to
do.
do.
My
My
skills,
skills,
my
my
gifts,
gifts,
my
my
abilities,
abilities,
and
and
things
things
that
that
I've
I've
learned
learned
over
over
the
the
years,
years,
formally
formally
and
and
informally,
informally,
to
to
try and
try and
bring
bring
some
some
stability
stability
into
into
difficult
difficult
situations.
situations.
Gives
Gives
me
me
an
an
opportunity
opportunity
to
to
be
be
around
around
people
people
that
that
maybe
maybe
I
I
otherwise
otherwise
wouldn't
wouldn't
be
be
around.
around.
And
And
always
always
look
look
for
for
the
the
opportunity
opportunity
to
to
connect,
connect,
to
to
show
show
God's
God's
love
love
in
in
practical,
practical,
tangible,
tangible,
everyday
everyday
ways,
ways,
introducing
introducing
people
people
to
to
Jesus.
Jesus.
Sometimes
Sometimes
that
that
looks
looks
different
different
than
than
others,
others,
but
but
again,
again,
excited
excited
for
for
where
where
we're
we're
at
at
currently.
currently.
Hope
Hope
you'll
you'll
excuse
excuse
the
the
hat.
hat.
Not
Not
only
only
is
is
it
it
freezing
freezing
up
up
here
here
today,
today,
but
but
my
my
bald
bald
head
head
is
is
very,
very,
very
very
shiny,
shiny,
and
and
I
I
figured
figured
that
that
we
we
don't
don't
want
want
to
to
put
put
anyone's
anyone's
eyes
eyes
out
out
this
this
morning,
morning,
or
or
this
this
afternoon,
afternoon,
I
I
guess,
guess,
while
while
we're
we're
learning
learning
together.
together.
So
So
hope
hope
you'll
you'll
forgive
forgive
the
the
hat.
hat.
It's
It's
for
for
you,
you,
not
not
for
for
me.
me.
Before
Before
we
we
continue,
continue,
I'd
I'd
just
just
like
like
to
to
have
have
a
a
word
word
of
of
prayer.
prayer.
I'm
I'm
asking
asking
God
God
would
would
you
you
be
be
with
with
us
us
today,
today,
wherever
wherever
you
you
are,
are,
wherever
wherever
I
I
am.
am.
So
So
let's
let's
take
take
that
that
moment
moment
together.
together.
Father,
Father,
I
I
just
just
thank
thank
you
you
for
for
the
the
opportunity
opportunity
to
to
connect
connect
with
with
the
the
technology.
technology.
Pray
Pray
for
for
us
us
this
this
morning,
morning,
God.
God.
We
We
are
are
diving
diving
into
into
a topic we may have heard spoken of many times. I just pray that you would put the perspective you want us to have on it. God, I pray that you'd be with me as I share. I pray you'd be with all of us as we're learning. I pray that you give us grace with one another and the patience to try and understand maybe new topics for us. Thank you that you love us. I pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Before
Before
we
we
actually
actually
dive
dive
into
into
the
the
practical
practical
lessons,
lessons,
I'm
I'm
hoping
hoping
this
this
will
will
be
be
practical.
practical.
I
I
just
just
do
do
want
want
to
to
say,
say,
we're
we're
talking
talking
about
about
trauma
trauma
today.
today.
Trauma
Trauma
is
is
a
a
very
very
broad
broad
topic.
topic.
There
There
are
are
many
many
avenues
avenues
we
we
could
could
go
go
today.
today.
We
We
could
could
get
get
into
into
details.
details.
We could
We could
have
have
conversations
conversations
about
about
a
a
wide
wide
number
number
of
of
things,
things,
all
all
related
related
to
to
trauma,
trauma,
and
and
they'd
they'd
all
all
be
be
really
really
good
good
conversations.
conversations.
But
But
for
for
our
our
purposes
purposes
today,
today,
what
what
we're
we're
going
going
to
to
do
do
is
is
kind
kind
of
of
a
a
10,000-foot
10,000-foot
flyover.
flyover.
We're
We're
going
going
to
to
try
try
and
and
get
get
a
a
bit
bit
of
of
a
a
perspective
perspective
on
on
what
what
trauma
trauma
is,
is,
how
how
that
that
can
can
impact
impact
us,
us,
and
and
can
can
we
we
heal?
heal?
What
What
do
do
we
we
do
do
with
with
trauma
trauma
in
in
our
our
lives,
lives,
as
as
well
well
as
as
seeing
seeing
biblical
biblical
perspective,
perspective,
Jesus
Jesus
and
and
trauma,
trauma,
and
and
how
how
God
God
responds
responds
to
to
it?
it?
So
So
I
I
may
may
leave
leave
you
you
with
with
some
some
questions.
questions.
That's
That's
possible.
possible.
There
There
may
may
be
be
some
some
people
people
who
who
were
were
hoping
hoping
I
I
would
would
take
take
it
it
a
a
different
different
direction.
direction.
It's
It's
just
just
too
too
big
big
of
of
a
a
topic
topic
to
to
handle
handle
in
in
one
one
conversation.
conversation.
And
And
so
so
I just wanted to put that out there. I do recognize that there's going to be things that we don't get into today. But hopefully you could maybe talk about it another time.
As far as mental health goes in Canada, it's helped to know where we've been, to know where we're going.
Mental health, the conversation around psychology, counseling, psychotherapy, any sort of clinical talk therapy, it's a very new art, very new science compared to some of the others. You think that Sigmund Freud is credited as really the father of psychotherapy and psychoanalysis, and he had his own version of what that looked like in the early 1900s. But he was one of the first people to come out publicly and study the impact of different events on our lives in our development as human beings. He was the first person to suggest stages of development, and he was the first person to really popularize the idea that what happened to us in that time can have profound impacts on the rest of our lives. He would refer to that as fixations, but that he was the beginning of it. In 1900, he worked from 1900 till the 1930s. In the grand scheme of history, that's not that long ago. From Freud, we started to hear about different people breaking off of his research, people who were coming with, you know, behavioral psychology, developmental psychology, but they were all very crude. You know, we've heard the studies of Pavlov and the dog. Well, that didn't come till quite a bit later, quite a bit more recently. It wasn't actually until soldiers coming home from World War II did we start to realize we need to be doing more work for people that were coming out of stressful situations. If you've watched any of the World War I movies, or you're a history buff at all, you know that when soldiers in World War I were upset or distressed, or they would freeze up in battle, they would call it shell shock. They thought that the physical blasting around them was causing an inability for them to make decisions. They didn't have any idea about PTSD or trauma or stress. They didn't understand any of that because no one had really gotten into it at that point in history. So when soldiers started to come home from World War II, the expectation was, well, they're going to come back and they're going to keep their job on the farm. They're going to keep their job in the factory. They're going to keep, you know, being functional fathers, functional siblings, functional children. And what they had gone through was just made it impossible for them to come back and be the same as they had been before they left. Well, thankfully, that spurred on a conversation for people to start having more open ideas for how to treat these individuals from these wounds that we couldn't see. See, it makes sense that if somebody gets hurt, physically hurt in battle, that they're going to come back and they're going to be treated for that. You know, if someone is now no longer able to walk or access buildings that without a wheelchair, well, we know how to handle that. We build them a ramp. You know, we make the building accessible to them. But when these individuals were coming home and they were hurt, but they were hurt with these invisible wounds that kept them up at night, that caused nightmares, that caused anger and outbursts, we didn't know what to do with any of that. So if you think about that, there's not a single one of us who doesn't have some connection in our life that wasn't around at that point. We know many, many people who were alive during the real uptick of the conversation surrounding mental health. Since that time, mental health has continued to grow. The understanding of psychology, the understanding of behavior, the understanding of coping has all come leaps and bounds, and I'm very grateful for that. I think all of us should be very grateful for that. But at the same time, we're still learning. There are things that are coming out today that are so brand new, we don't know what to do with them. We're constantly evolving our understanding of what stress and what tension and what chaos does to younger people in development. We're still trying to get our handle on many mental health issues, some of the psychotic disorders and some of the larger, more concerning disorders that are becoming more frequent. We still are struggling to know what to do with. Most of us have heard the word trauma in some kind of a conversation. There's the physiological trauma, a trauma ward in a hospital, where if someone is hurt physically by an impact, that is considered trauma to the leg, trauma to the arm, trauma to the head. These are traumatic events. for our purposes, though, we're not talking necessarily about physical or physiological trauma. We're talking about emotional trauma. And what that actually is trauma is the long-term response to distressing events. So trauma is not necessarily the event itself. Trauma is actually how we respond to the event. So when something stressful happens around us, we all react. Whether we know it or not, we have a response to stress. We have a response to crisis. We have a response to chaos in our lives. And when that response becomes unhealthy, when that response becomes permanent or feels permanent, when that response becomes something that we cannot cope with on our own, we're into the world of trauma. Events in our lives will be more memorable for us because they may be the moments that we learn something the hard way. The expression that we've all used at some point, well, I learned that the hard way, tends to be a way of diminishing potentially traumatic incidents in our lives where something has come along and been difficult or hectic or chaotic and caused us a lot of distress and changed the way that we see the world, changed the way that we engage the world, changed the way that we see ourselves, and maybe even changed the way that we see God. Trauma is the response to severe distress or severe chaos in our lives. We know that for some people right now, you might be thinking about this and think that I'm way off. You might think that, well, trauma is actually going to have to do with the most serious forms of abuse or neglect or violence that you could possibly think of. And that's just simply not true. The fact is that every single one of us has a different tolerance for the world around us. We're all built very differently. All you have to do is look around your own home to know that not everybody responds to stress or tension or confrontation the same way. That all of us were built differently. Therefore, all of us respond differently to stressful events. There may be things in my life that I considered unbelievably stressful and that have led to a traumatic response that you would have sat through and gone, well, that didn't bother me even a little bit. Because of our different makeups, we have different capacities for dealing with stress. A good example of this is if two people are in the same car accident, one person goes to drive the next day or goes straight to the rental lot and picks up a car and continues to drive, while the next person is uncomfortable in vehicles for the next 10 years of their lives. That the same event will have different impacts on the people that experience them, even if they're identical. That a set of siblings that grow up in the same house can respond to events and times in their lives with very different emotional and mental responses to those events. This is where it gets really, really tricky for us as Christians to try and deal with the topic of trauma, because too often we kind of have this understanding that if it didn't hurt for me, well, I don't really know why it's hurting for them. And that sort of a response to someone's trauma can be very hurtful and damaging just because the individual who's experiencing the trauma no longer feels understood, maybe doesn't feel valued, maybe doesn't really want to argue about the stress in their life becoming, coming out in unhealthy ways. We really have to be gentle when we're coming at the topic of trauma. Additionally, trauma tends to be very personal in nature as well. So this means that things like car accidents absolutely can be traumatic. Things like, family splits, when someone passes away, those are traumatic events. But we also tend to be traumatized from things and seasons in our lives where we made decisions that weren't very helpful. We put ourselves through more distress and stress than we needed to, and those events have led to the way that we see the world. And sometimes that's a traumatic response to the world around us. Yeah, for individuals that have been in unhealthy relationships or grew up in unhealthy households, the way that they see the world, the way that they respond to the world is very different. I have a friend who spent a lot of time working in in the city, on the streets with people who had recently been released from jail, from prison. And he notices people now who behave certain ways and that he's very used to seeing in individuals who had recently been released from prison when they are actually on the streets, the way that they look at people, the way that they're watching the world around them. He notices these little behaviors that he believes were caused by the stress that they experienced either on the street or in prison. We clinically would look at that as a trauma response to stress and environment, that someone who spent time in an unsafe environment may not be used to being relaxed in public spaces, may not be used to believing the best about the people around them, that in their experience, the things that they've gone through have changed the way that they see everything. That's a trauma response. Truth is that trauma changes everything. Trauma changes the way that we think. When we're born, most of us are if you are fortunate enough to be born in a happy, loving home, then we grow up being pretty naive. We know that kids are pretty naive. We have to tell them not to take candy from strangers. We have to make sure that they know not to put, forks in electrical sockets. We as parents have a job to do to nurture that child, to try and shape their thinking and to try and encourage them to be safe but not jaded. We want to make sure that they're taking care of themselves, that they're thinking rationally. We want to teach logic and common sense and decision making and manners and all of these things, because children are moldable. Now, as we grow up through our stages of development, if at some point in that development, and development is all the way through the end of our lives, so I'm not specifically talking about kids here, but at some point through our stages of development, we experience an incredibly stressful event. That event can be significant enough for us to respond in a way that it changes the way we think about relationships. For instance, if we have a best friend in the whole wide world and that best friend says, we're never ever going to be apart and I'm a child and I'm 10 years old and me and my best friend are just living life. And then one day I go to school and that friend is not at school and we find out that his family moved very suddenly. In a child's life, that can be traumatic enough to the point where they say, well, I'm not going to get as close to people anymore. They may not consciously say this, but the action, the stressful event was someone that was a staple in their lives, who was a rock, a fixture in their lives, very quickly was removed from the presence in their life. And now that stress and that distress and that chaos causes long-lasting effects. And trauma doesn't have to be a permanent thing in order for it to be really trauma. Some things are short-term traumatic. Some things are more traumatic when we're kids than when we're adults. Some things are going to change our thinking in the short term. Like that example I just gave, that's a pretty innocent example. But for that child, maybe it does impact the way that they make friends over the next 6 months, the way they think about friendship over the next 6 months to a year. And if we change the way we think about something for 6 months to a year, it's very possible that that period of time has an actual impact on the rest of our development, though we may not be able to point back at that single event and say, when my best friend moved away, I changed the way I thought about friends and I decided I was going to be more of a, more of a loner. I was going to keep my circle small. We're not processing at that level as a 10-year-old. But clinically, when we look at traumatic events, it's a whole pile of stress in our lives that shape the way that we see the world around us, engage with the world around us. Trauma can also change our actions and our habits. Someone who has experienced a significant amount of trauma is going to behave in a way that is reflecting how they believe they can keep themselves safe. If you look at, there's a really great TV show called Survivor Man. If you haven't seen it, it's worth a watch. But this is a guy who has dedicated his life to surviving in the wild and teaching others how to do that. Because of his experiences, he knows what to look for. Therefore, when he is dropped into a forest in the middle of nowhere, he has his priorities set as to how he's going to behave to keep himself safe in that moment. Trauma has us on high alert for certain things. Therefore, somebody who has been who's really had a traumatic response to events in their lives may have patterns of behavior that someone who hasn't experienced the same things wouldn't have. For instance, somebody who had a very traumatic childhood, an unsafe childhood, may make sure that they sleep with all the lights on. They may make sure, even as an adult, that they put something in front of the door that will make a noise in case the door gets opened. They may refuse to sit with their back to a door. Someone who's had a lot of violence in their lifetime, or a lot of arguing and chaos in their lifetime, may choose to leave a conversation when they believe it's escalating to an argument rather than have the conversation. In their own way, they're trying to protect themselves from the event that happened in the past. They're trying to keep themselves safe from being hurt in the same ways they were in the past. Trauma changes our actions and our habits. It only takes one time of losing your car keys to really make sure you remember where you set them. That might lead to a new habit. Again, this is super innocent stuff. These are things that happen to all of us. Losing your car keys is not in and of itself traumatic, but something as insignificant as losing my car keys might lead to a new habit where every time I come home, I hang my keys up in the same spot. It's learning. I don't want to lose my car keys again. That was miserable. I was late to work. My boss was mad. So I'm going to make sure that I know where my keys are every single day, right? So if we accept that there's a change of behavior with something so small as misplacing my car keys, it's not that much of a leap for us to accept that when bigger, more intense things happen to us, that we change our behavior to try our best to make sure it doesn't happen again. Trauma will change our actions and our habits. Trauma changes the way that we cope. What coping means is, even on a healthy, good day, there's a certain amount of stress that we carry as human beings, from school-age children all the way up to retired adults. Just the demands of our life have some sort of a weight to them. If I go and I have a great day at work, there's still stress associated with that. I still come home a little tired. I still come home a little bit ready to recover. Coping is the term that we use for how do you handle stress. There is healthy coping skills that we absolutely have to have as human beings. Whether that is coming home, we get the kids to bed, then we sit down, and our coping is we're going to sit down and watch a hockey game and we're just going to talk. That's a coping skill. It's healthy. Whether that is I had a day where I was stuck at my desk and I'm going to come home and I'm going to go for a run. And that's good for me. That's good for my mind. That's good for my body. That's what I'm going to do right now when I got home from work. Just go for a run. That's coping. Maybe it's, you know, spending time with the kids. Maybe it's reading a book. There's a wide range of what a healthy coping mechanism may look like. And truthfully, it differs person to person. Truthfully, for me, it even differs day to day. It depends on what my stressor was that day. If I had a day full of meetings or a day full of being around people and things were very tense, then when I come home, my form of coping may be a lot more isolated than a day where I spent by myself in my office, kind of lonely, that I'm going to come home and want to just be surrounded by friends and family. That coping changes based on the stress in our lives. Trauma in particular can change the way that we cope because there's more to cope with. Traumatic events or incidents or periods of time that lead to trauma responses may cause significantly more stress. We think of people who had unsafe childhoods, who experienced all kinds of violence that many people have never experienced. They're carrying more baggage than the rest of us. And maybe you know that better than anyone. But when we carry that extra weight, that pressure, that stress, that tension is going to go somewhere, whether we like it or not. We're going to find something to do with that stress in our lives. Trauma can take us from someone who copes easily and in a healthy way with most stress to someone who is constantly looking to maybe more unhealthy ways to keep ourselves grounded, unhealthy ways to keep ourselves distracted, and that we might be looking for more of a distraction than if we had never experienced the traumatic event. Trauma and addictions tend to go hand in hand. When we first started to learn about addictions, it was totally backwards. The way they did it was one of the behavioral psychologists back in the 50s and 60s took two rats, and he put the rats in a cage. And in the cage, there was food, and there was two water bottles. And on one side, there was a water bottle that was just full of good, clean water. On the other side of the cage, there was a water bottle that was full of water mixed with drugs. I believe at that point they used morphine. And the rat went and drank the morphine water bottle until it passed away. And when that rat died drinking the morphine water, we said, well, I mean, this must mean addiction is a choice. That rat could have chosen the clean, healthy water or the dangerous drug water, and it chose the drug water. So we started to treat people as though they were criminals for their addiction. That our prison system in Canada and the United States are full of people who are in there for nonviolent drug offenses, which usually meant they were accessing drugs for themselves. Fast forward 10 or 15 years, another researcher said, well, hang on a second. That's an interesting study, but we put those rats in those cages without anything that was meaningful for a rat. So this researcher made a much larger enclosure. He called it Rat Paradise. And what he did is he filled it with plants and with food and with toys and with other rats so that they could live healthy lives for a rat. And he did the same thing. He put the healthy, clean water in one end, and he put the water that was mixed with the heroin or the morphine on the other end. And what he found is the rats did not consume the drug water to the same extent. It wasn't even close. And so what he started to look at there was, well, maybe if these rats had meaning in their lives, maybe if these rats were free from the stress of being put in a metal cage with nothing meaningful, they wouldn't be going to this water to cope. Animal trials don't always compare. Some experiments we do with animals, then try to do them with humans, and it makes no sense. But for many years, we were treating people who were addicted to drugs, addicted to alcohol, as criminals, as that needed to be punished and separated from the chemical of their choice. Now we're learning that much more often than not, I won't say 100% of the time because there's always an exception, but the vast majority of the time, addictions are a symptom of trauma. Addictions are an unhealthy coping skill gone wrong from someone who is trying to stop feeling the pain, the stress, the anxiety. They're trying to cope with their history, with the things that happened to them, with the things that happened around them, the things that they've witnessed in their lives. Trauma will change our coping to the point that we will start doing things that we never even thought were on our radar. There's not a single human being who wakes up in the morning and says, today I'm going to become a drug addict. What happens is people continue to look for a fix to fill a gap, to heal parts of them, or to distract and numb parts of them that they would rather not pay attention to. Keeping in mind that individuals who go down the route of substance addiction tend to be doing that from a beginning place of trauma response to abuse, to neglect, to violence. And I think that it's helpful for us as the church, capital C church, to try and start to have compassion on individuals who are trying their hardest to do what they know how to do to keep themselves safe, to keep themselves distracted, and to keep themselves numb from ever having to feel the pain of their past. In addition to coping, in addition to habits and actions, in addition to our thinking, trauma can change our perspective on the world. Trauma generally will not change the perspective just on one small thing. Trauma generally has ripple effects. If you throw a rock into the middle of a still lake, there are ripples. Some are bigger than the other, closer to the rock, but those ripples carry on and create this huge ring of ripples. Trauma changes our perspective, and some perspectives will change drastically, and some perspectives will change less significantly, but the way we've been treated by the world, the way that we've experienced things around us, absolutely changes the way we see everyone. Trauma changes our perspective on people. Specific people, trauma will change our perspective on specific people if those people are somehow involved in the events that lead to the trauma. If we trusted someone and they took from us, if we loved somebody and they act unloving towards us, that can change how we see them specifically. But again, the ripple there being that it may change the way we see people generally as well. We may become cynical. We may become skeptical. I know lots of people joke as you get older, you get a little more cynical. And I think that's a direct reflection on what we're talking about, that all of us have experienced various incidents that have led to a wide variety of trauma responses, and we get a little bit more cautious. We get a little bit more careful into how we are dealing with the world around us, how we trust people. We only touched the hot stove once before we learned to maybe not touch that anymore, right? That's a physical traumatic event that we don't want to get burned. We don't want to get hurt physically by the stove. But again, if we apply that to ourselves in a non-physical way, then how many times am I going to enter into a similar situation if I know it's going to lead to me getting hurt? It's going to change the way my perspective is on people. It's going to change my perspective on relationships. Trauma will more than likely change our perspective on relationships. This pandemic has been a rough one for a lot of reasons. Addictions being one, but relationships being another. That unhealthy relationships, toxic relationships, and reports of violence have gone through the roof. I believe at the beginning of the pandemic, 3 or 4 months in, Paris, France reported a 100% increase in calls to helplines. We're seeing similar numbers in Canada right now. You can do the research on your own. I don't want to quote stats and misquote them, but traumatic incidents in relationships may change the way we see relationships forever. If you have been in an unhealthy relationship or know someone that has, you may have witnessed firsthand how difficult it is for those people to get back into a relationship after having been hurt by someone that said they loved them. If it's a parent and child relationship that has gone sour, it can really change the way I feel about becoming a parent. If I had a horrible relationship with my parents, there was some chaos and tension and maybe some abuse there. Well, that changes the way I see parent-child relationships in general. And it may make me nervous. It may give me extra anxiety around becoming a father if I know that I had a tenuous relationship with mine. That's not my case, but that's an example of how it can change your relationships. That trauma is going to change your perspective on people generally, and it'll change your perspective on relationship. A tough one here is that trauma will also change our perspective on ourselves. Generally, the way I've seen this play out is that trauma will change the perspective on an individual's self-worth, believing that I'm valuable. If an individual is mistreated long enough, they start to believe that that's something that they deserve. That in that moment, their trauma has created a conversation in their own mind that changes their perspective on themselves. Maybe believing that they're not somebody who's very valuable. Maybe they're not worth protecting. And maybe that, since nobody else wants to protect them, why should they protect themselves? That if they had grown up in an otherwise healthy environment, that difficulty with self-worth might have still been there, but it likely wouldn't have been as intense. It likely wouldn't have been as destructive, and it likely wouldn't have been something that caused the kind of self-destructive outlook as not valuing yourself does. People who experience trauma, and this is again just the science of it, people that experience trauma in their lives tend to be at a higher risk for bad decisions, bad decision making, high risk behavior, high risk drug activity, high risk relationships, high risk sexual activity. That trauma changes our perspective on ourselves. And when you add in the fact that it changes our perspective on our actions and our coping skills and all these things, well, now if we add, you know, a low self-worth to that conversation, there's a whole lot of bad that can come in, a whole lot of dangerous behavior, a whole lot of dangerous thought patterns that can come in and really be destructive for the individual who's experienced trauma. Trauma can change our perspective on our worldview, on our God. If we grew up in the church and our trauma had something to do with our friends, our family, at high school, you know, in Ottawa, I grew up in Ottawa, by the way. I was at Hillcrest. I remember a conversation with a friend of mine in grade 10 or 11, who told me that she would never believe in God because she asked God to save her mom from cancer and he didn't. Therefore, she could not believe that there would be a God. Trauma changes our perspective on everything. That if the behavior of the people around us, if maybe even our own behavior has contributed to the chaos of our lives, we may become cynical. We may become hopeless. If we're driven to a point of despair, we're driven to a point of hopelessness, we're driven to a point of not really knowing if what we thought was true even matters anymore, we end up with all these huge existential questions. Oftentimes, again, I won't say 100% because that's just not responsible, but oftentimes individuals who've experienced severe traumatic events or events that have led to severe traumatic responses may have a hard time believing that if there is a God, that he is a good God, that he is a personal God, that he is a God who is loving, who is protective. They may have a hard time believing that he's just. They may have a hard time believing that he loves them. Individuals might believe, well, sure, the Bible says that God is loving and personal and all those things. So fine, I believe it. I just don't think it's true for me. And we start to use our trauma as these lenses that we're seeing things through, that we have a hard time seeing anything outside of the lens of the traumatic responses that we've had to incidents in our lives. And at that point, we start to have unhealthy relationships with ourselves, unhealthy relationship to the world around us, and put up our own mental blocks in in our own lives to have a relationship with God. You have to remember that all of our lives have to do about adapting to the world around us. We know that when it goes from fall to winter in Canada, we know we adapt by putting on different boots. We adapt by wearing, you know, warmer clothes, warmer hats. We adapt by starting our cars 15 minutes early, hopefully, before we get on the road. That the rhythms in our lives are full of our needing to adapt. And if you add to the regular adaptation that has to happen for us, if you add to that violence and stress and abuse and manipulation and loss and grief, we're going to continually be trying to adapt and change the way that we behave and the way that we protect ourselves, the way that we cope with the world around us to reflect the realities that we've experienced. The hard thing, maybe it's not news to you and maybe it is, the hard thing to grasp with all of this is that trauma is the result of a fallen world. That God created everything and it was good. And in Genesis 3, for those of you that are familiar, Genesis 3, sin enters into the world, sin and death and destruction. And in that moment, I believe everything related to trauma came into the world as well. That's when we started to experience violence. We started to experience loss and manipulation. The other hard reality, and maybe you're well aware of this for yourself, and maybe you're not, but it is very, very, very likely that every single one of us has experienced some kind of trauma that has shaped the way that we see our lives, the way that we live our lives, the way that we engage with people. Now, these may be big traumatic events, and they may be smaller. They may be equivalent to a lot of times forgetting car keys. You know, it may not be that you could put your finger on one massive incident that has shaped your whole point of view. And unfortunately, it may be that you could point exactly to the moments that changed the way that you think, the way that you act, the way that you cope. Maybe that trauma has really had an impact. When we're healing from trauma, when we're working through trauma, we have the option to try to ignore it, which will probably not lead to anything good. You can only shake a Coke bottle for so long before the top blows off of it. And if we try to ignore our trauma, we're functionally allowing ourselves to be stirred up and the pressure to build, and eventually it's going to come out in an unhealthy way, whether we like that or not. But when we're healing from trauma, even as Christians, if you are someone who has a very conservative Christian view on mental health and the world, and are unfamiliar with some of the newer techniques, you know, in mental health, don't be afraid of them. I think it's important to be willing to look at it. I mean, if I break my leg today, I will go to the hospital where there are doctors who know how to put me back together. We know how complicated something like arthritis in our knees can be. We know how much that can impact our lives, and we don't hesitate to go to a doctor to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves properly. Well, the human brain is the most complicated organism in all of creation. It's very likely that if things impact the brain, if things impact the way we think, that if something is off with our mental health, that we should probably get someone who knows what they're doing to help us walk through it. This is where I would encourage everybody to reach out to a solid therapist, a credible therapist, not your friend who says they can do therapy out of the back of their van, but you know, have a look through a family doctor, have a look through a counseling agency at someone who can actually be helpful for us. We have to look at how we're taking care of ourselves. We have to become aware of some of the things that are unhealthy habits and unhealthy coping mechanisms in our lives, and be willing to try and change those, to try and steer ourselves towards something healthier. Maybe we didn't realize that those, you know, two or three glasses of wine we were having every night is really kind of an unhealthy coping skill, coming from too much stress or potentially traumatic event. Maybe we need to look at the way we take care of ourselves and try and be healthier. I think it's also worth noting, just like we will take Tylenol for a headache, or you know, we will put on all kinds of medication for our heart health, there is a time and a place for medication surrounding mental health, whether that's antidepressants, antipsychotic, anti-anxiety meds. This is not something that, again, we're going to have too much time to dive into, but get good counsel on that, because I believe very strongly that God has created certain people who are much smarter than I will ever be, and given them insight and knowledge into taking care of us in ways that I could never have figured out. So I think that in trying to heal from trauma, it's also important to go to a doctor to work with professionals to try and take care of the issue. Again, you wouldn't try and deal with your own heart blockage on your own. I mean, at least you shouldn't. You know, you won't try and repair your own ACL. Again, at least you shouldn't. You know, we want to make similar comparisons to wellness and our mental health, our emotional health. We want to make sure we're taking the best care of it we possibly can. And I want to say that those things, the therapy, the self-care, the medication, come alongside of, we want to do those things and take care of our spiritual well-being, because we are full human beings. We are body, mind. In closing, I just want to touch on Jesus and trauma. One of the things that I love about the Bible is that you can go through it and you can see repeatedly that God is taking care of the whole person. That anytime Jesus is engaging with someone or Yahweh is engaging with someone in the Old Testament, you see so many examples of them dealing with the whole person, the physical well-being, the mental well-being, the spiritual well-being. I think it's something that we've missed a little bit sometimes. If we're being honest, we can realize that we've powered through a little bit more than we should have and put a huge emphasis on the spiritual well-being, which there should be. But we serve a God who cares and loves people as they are, not just spiritually. If you have a Bible, you can open it up to John chapter 16, verse 33. And it says this: "In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world." In this text, this tiny little text, Jesus is in no way denying the reality that we are going to experience. In no way, shape, or form is he downplaying the pain of abandonment, the chaos that we're going to have to walk through. In no way, shape, or form is Jesus ignoring that. He's saying, as a matter of fact, you need to expect it. As long as you're in this world, things are going to go sideways and it's going to hurt, and you're going to have to deal with that. But take heart, I have overcome the world. This is not Jesus offering comfort by saying, if you are a Christian, you'll avoid it all. If you believe in me, you will be happy-go-lucky the rest of your life. He is saying, if you put your faith in me, I'm bigger than abuse. I'm bigger than addiction. I'm bigger than neglect, and I'm bigger than trauma. It's going to happen, but I'm here, and I can handle it. Keeping in mind that Jesus came into human history to live the life that you and I could not live, that he died on a cross, the death that we deserved, abandoned by God, and that on the third day he was brought back to life to defeat our final enemy, death, to enable us the opportunity to live our lives the way we were created to live, which is in relationship with him. I think we need to be looking at all aspects of our lives through the reality that we can walk with, that Jesus will be walking with us through that. And if this is brand new information for you today, I encourage you to reach out to the leadership at Southeast City Church at any point to get clarification on any of this. But it is as good as it sounds, that the God of this universe cares so much about you, about your trauma, about your healing, that he's willing to walk with you through that. And bring the healing and the hope that is missing from our lives a lot of the time. I hope this wasn't too rambly. I hope this was informative. Trauma is a heavy, heavy topic. Trauma is a very personal topic. You'll notice I didn't dive too deeply into specific examples. It's because, you know, we don't want to target any particular one trauma. We don't want to put emphasis on something over another, because we will all respond to different events differently. And so I think, you know, hopefully this was something that gave you a few tools in the tool belt to understand trauma. Potentially this is the encouragement you need to deal with trauma, to get the help, to get not just counselors involved, but spiritual leaders as well. Thank you so much for the opportunity to spend the time with you guys. Looking forward to the day that we can do that in person. Let's pray. Father, I just thank you for, again, technology to be able to communicate with each other, even when we're not physically in the same room. God, I pray that you would just be working in our hearts today to help us better understand trauma, help us better understand ourselves, help us better understand the role that you would love to play in our lives. God, I pray that we would have the courage to allow you in to those parts of our lives that we're not comfortable talking about, that we're not comfortable saying out loud. I pray that we would just be inviting you, God, and that this might be the first step to healing from any of the traumatic responses that we've had to incidents in our lives. Thank you again that you love us. I pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Well, thanks so much, Liam. for leading us in worship. And Pete, thank you so much for talking to us about trauma today. And yes, hopefully we will be able to see you in person sometime soon. I've been on several steep learning curves over the last few years, and one of those learning curves has been on the topic of trauma, learning first of all just how common and pervasive trauma is, but also learning the importance of what's called trauma-informed care. If you know people have been through trauma, it should change how you approach them and how you interact with them and love on them. And we are a church that has been blessed to reach out to communities where a lot of the things Pete talked about happen, where there's abuse and where there's people fleeing from experiences of war and oppression and persecution, addictions and mental illness. And so we do some ministry. And we also, as a church, have a heart to be all about fostering and adoption and safe families. And so we want to love on kids from hard places. But in order to do that, we need to be trauma-informed. And so I'm excited to bring along Amy Jo Smith. She has been trained in trauma-informed care, gone through several courses, and she is by profession an early childhood educator, and she's also, as I mentioned at the beginning, the trauma training lead for a ministry here in Ottawa called Connect Care. So she's going to come up now, and Rachel's going to ask her some questions on how we can be a trauma-informed church.
So I hope you're all toasty warm at home, because Amy Jo and I are going to keep our coats on for now. It's a little cold here. But yeah, welcome, Amy Jo. It's so awesome to have you here. I've had the privilege to know Amy Jo for a few years now. Sorry, I'm just going to take a deep breath. Makes it hard to breathe here. Yeah, so I've known her for the past few years, and her and I have worked together for about a year now with the Connect Care Ministry, and it's awesome to hear Amy Jo talk about this stuff. She's very, very passionate, and it just exudes through every fiber of her body how passionate she is to serve children and serve families, and so I'm just excited that you all get to experience that here tonight and learn from Amy Jo tonight. So I'm going to pull up my questions here and put on a timer so we don't go way over time.
Told Rachel she might have to cut me off.
Okay. So Amy Jo, can you tell us what trauma-informed care is and why is it important for us to know what it is?
So I'm so thankful that we just got to hear from someone with a lot of experience in this field, and it was so helpful to hear Pete sort of explain the different kinds of trauma. And so really, to me, trauma-informed care is understanding the ways that trauma can come into the life of a child or an adult and the implications of what it caused. And he talked a little bit about how it actually can change the brain. We talk about the four B's, so it actually can change the way that we think, the way that we see, and he mentioned the way that we see ourselves, the way that we see God, and the way that we see other people. Mm-hmm. And not only that, it also changes our beliefs. And I think he talked about the baggage. And so you can picture someone coming in with a suitcase, and it might be invisible, but it's there. And so it changes the way that we, our beliefs and also our behavior. And often the thing that we see is the behavior, and I'll talk about that a little more in a bit. But the care part, so it's understanding where the trauma can come from, the implications of how it affects a child, and the care part is how do we respond to that. And to me, it's about being proactive instead of reactive, because so often we, when we encounter behavior, we react to the behavior from our own from our own reactions. And so when we're preparing to go somewhere, you want to dress for the weather. And today, I'm glad I brought a coat because it's chilly here. So it's so helpful to be able to have some of the tools ahead of time to know that we don't have to just in the moment figure it out.
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like preparing ourselves to interact with people, enter into people's lives that have experienced trauma. We also learned that anyone can experience trauma. It's not necessarily someone who has experienced just violence or abuse, but we all carry this baggage. So can this be used? Can trauma-informed care be used in everyday interactions with just regular people? And Amy Jo has a focus on children, but a lot of this stuff can be applied to us adults. It can be applied to anyone. So how can trauma-informed care be used in everyday interactions?
So Karen Purvis was a researcher, and she did a lot of work in, as Pete was saying, some of this is fairly new research. And she had a heart and a passion for children. And she said, one of her quotes is that if harm comes through relationship, if trauma comes through relationship, it can only be healed in relationship. And she believed that deep, deep healing can come. And I know that your church wants to be a place that is safe and welcoming and healing for people in your community and also in your congregation. And so another thing she said was often when children might ask for the love that they need the most in the most unloving ways. And if anybody has been around a toddler, you know that sometimes they ask for things in challenging ways, but they really need love and they need us to be present for them. But often when those behaviors come through, we respond in a way that causes disconnection instead of connection. And so the healing comes through connection. And I think often we think sometimes love will be enough, like we'll open our doors and we'll welcome people, and we know that we have a love and a care for people in our community. But I was thinking this week about my friend who is a wheelchair user, and she's very involved in her church, but they had to make a ramp so that she could come in. And I like that Pete mentioned that often when we can see the wheelchair, we know what she needs. But when individuals have experienced trauma, it's often an invisible baggage that they're carrying, an invisible challenge and struggle, and we don't necessarily know. And so part of this being trauma-informed is us putting on the lens, because they have a lens that they're looking through, but we need to put on a new lens so that we can see them with the eyes that God has for us.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I know for myself, there's a lot of, when you enter into the trauma-informed world, there's a lot of unlearning and relearning and a lot of equipping that we need in order to love these kids. And so that's what I'm hearing from you is trauma-informed care is basically giving us tools in our toolbox to be able to love kids and people well, is what I'm hearing. So how can the church, we are striving to be a trauma-informed church, so how can the church take steps to be more trauma-informed?
So I think you've already started. and the first thing is to be open, and I love that you are already open to listening and learning. I would say some of my greatest teachers have been 2 feet tall. Sometimes they're shorter because they're in a puddle on the floor. But just listening and being present with people and listening to their stories, whether they're children, whether they're adults, listening with your heart. And then also taking proactive steps to learn from people like we just did this morning, who have paved the way and already done a lot of the work. And so Karen Purvis is one of those individuals who's done a lot of passionate work in this field, and I've learned a lot from her and others. And there are very practical opportunities coming up. There's a kids ministry conference I'll share with your leadership where there's just a 45-minute really practical toolbox that you can, for anyone who's working in kids ministry or just wants to know more about loving and serving your community.
Mm-hmm. And a few of us have gone through the Empowered to Connect conference. A few of us did it over the internet and did a Zoom call follow-up. And so is that happening again this summer? Do you know about that? Or
I know it's an online opportunity. I think they're taking a pause on that this year.
Okay.
But I will keep you tuned.
Yeah, so for those of you who joined us in our Empowered to Connect journey, that is also what we're talking about when we talk about trauma-informed care and things that we can put in our toolbox. So how can I, as an individual, do the work of understanding and healing in my own story? And how can others do the same?
Yeah, I love that you asked that, because I was telling a friend the other day, when I started this journey of understanding trauma, I had been working with children with very high behavior challenges and needed tools. But it also takes you on a journey, and I think a lot of foster adoptive parents, a lot of people serving their community, we realize this story is about us as well. And I think Pete did a good job of mentioning that, that there's often ways and ways we've been impacted in our life, and he talked a little bit about the stress and the long-term effects of feeling unsafe. And I think right now we're seeing a lot of challenges in our world that are affecting people in the way that they view and see things. So I think part of the journey has been understanding my own triggers, understanding my own challenges in the ways that I've put on a certain lens, and then letting God enlighten me and heal in those areas so that I can be a healing presence in the lives of others. Mm-hmm. And it's a journey. It's not a quick fix.
Yeah, I think when we enter into this trauma-informed care world, we quickly realize how much we have to do our own healing. You can't enter into this journey without observing your own behaviors, observing what Pete called adaptations, and like you said, really knowing those triggers and how we respond to people and how they might trigger us, and then just becoming aware of all those things. So that's awesome, Amy Jo. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
And maybe I'll just leave you with one more quote from Karen Purvis. She said, when a child is having a struggle, they need to know that they're loved in the midst of their worst behaviors. And I think that's what God ministers to us through this journey, is that we all need to have that deep love and connection with him and with others. And so this is a way that we can learn how to provide that for others as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. I really like that. I really recommend everybody go look up Karen Purvis at what's the university called? Karen Purvis Institute.
Mm-hmm. Of Child Development.
Of Child Development. And that can kind of get you on the path of learning more. She's really great and has left behind quite the legacy.
Links with your church.
Awesome. That would be great. Yeah, we'll pass along those links on our social media. So I'm just going to pray for you, Amy Jo, and I'm just going to pray for us and wrap up our time together. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
For the privilege of being here.
Dear Lord, thank you so much for our time here together. Thank you for the wealth of information that we've been given. Thank you for Pete. Thank you for Amy Jo, and thank you for the hard, hard work that they have been doing to heal children, to heal adults, and to heal communities through trauma-informed care. I just pray that you would bless both of them in their endeavors as they go out into the world doing this hard work, that you would just continue to love on them and wrap around them, and help us as a church to dive into this with compassion and understanding and a desire to learn and unlearn some of our own things, and allow ourselves to enter into a deep and raw relationship with you, where our own wounds are exposed, and allow your son to heal them and walk alongside us as we unveil our own traumatic experiences and our own behaviors that maybe have been changed and impacted by those experiences. And as we move forward, help us to humbly take on these new tools that we seek to find so that we can love others in our community and really be a place that is prepared to love people well through healthy and nurturing relationships that reflect who you are and your love. Thank you for all these things. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks, Rach, and thank you so much, Amy Jo. Wow, this was a full night, a lot to take in, a lot to learn and ponder and think deeply about. I hope that this evening wasn't just informative, but that it was also transformative, that it was a blessing, and I really, really hope that tonight would be the start of many, many conversations. Our church is on a journey to be more trauma-informed as we reach out to hard places and as we ourselves heal from the things that we've gone through so that we can enter into that fuller life that, Jesus has for us. So this will be a conversation we'll keep having, and I hope that you'll keep having it with us. So thanks again for being here. Just two quick things.